Leadership. James, how are you? President?
I'm fine, and yourself?
Good, good.
Thank you.
My name is Pinky Kekana.
I can hear your voice, and I see you too.
Unjani buti?
I see a P, like unjani consist.
No, good, good.
Okay. I'm about to start now.
No, we are ready.
Okay.
Sure.
Thank you. Let me take this opportunity, honored members, to welcome everybody to this portfolio committee meeting. A special welcome to the Minister of PPME, Honorable Monti Kungubele. I'm extending this word of welcome in his absentia because I was made aware that he accompanied the president to the inauguration of the new president of Zambia. So he will not be part of the meeting today. I was made aware of that, but I'm doing all this in his absence. Again, I want to extend a special word of welcome to the Deputy Minister, Honorable Pinky Kekana, to this family of DPME, and of course, the Portfolio Committee. She is the new Deputy Minister in DPME. I was also made aware that she is going to lead the discussions in the presentation that the department is going to make. I also want to congratulate Honorable Soli Malatsi for having ran a marathon to raise funds for the destitute children from Soweto to Tzaneen. That is a very good gesture, Honorable Malatsi. I thought I must also make the committee aware of that.
Recording in progress.
And we appreciate what you are doing for the poor children. As I've said, honorable members, there is only one apology that has been made, is that of Honorable Monti Kungubele. And I was also made aware also that the DPSA has requested the postponement of the item pension payout. So we are not going to deal with that today. And I was also made aware that the Minister of COCTA also requested that the issue that she was going to brief us about in the committee must be taken back because there's much work that still has to be done on that issue. Therefore, that matter will not be dealt with in the committee. Having said all of that, welcome all of you, honorable members. Let me, without any further waste of time, invite Deputy Minister Pinky Kekana to make her opening remarks before the presentation is made by DPME. Yes. Honorable Kekana, can you take the platform?
Chairperson.
Who's that now?
It's Honorable Madluwa, Chair.
And Honorable Gorman as well.
You are raising hands on the opening.
Yes, Chair.
That is very awkward, but let me hear what you want to say.
Chair, thank you very much for your indulgence. I'm raising my hand out of concern with particular reference to the item that has that we are not going to deal with in terms of the petition. And Chairperson, I have perused through that documents. We understand that there's also new ministry but my concern is, you know, we have 35,000 members here belonging to this organization who are discriminated at. And I think, Chair, as a committee, we have a constitutional duty when it comes to redress programs where people has been left behind. So I think, Chair, it is really important for us as a committee through you and with your indulgence to get clarity as to what extent and also when are we going to meet with this organization in order to solve the problem, because I'm particularly aware of the fact that this case is coming for quite a while. It has landed on the desk of the president as well as the desk of the Minister of Finance, and it's now with us, and it is just for the second time being taken off the agenda. Thank you so much, very much, Chair, for giving me the opportunity.
Honorable McClure, it is not taken off. There's still work to be done on that issue, and it will come back here to the committee. I will make sure that it happens. Who was the second one who wanted to speak?
Honorable Komani, Chair.
Honorable Komani.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning, colleagues and the Deputy Minister. Chair, I just wanted to record the apology of Honorable Motsepe, because he did not allow the Secretariat to read out the apologies. I just wanted to put that on record. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Komani. No, the Secretariat made me aware. He has not received that. Because what he does, once there are apologies, he makes me aware of those apologies. So, but we will record the apology of Honorable Motsepe. No problem, Honorable Komar.
Morning, Chair. It's James Weyer.
Okay, James Weyer.
Yes. I think my team has sent an apology that I will not be able to attend because there's cabinet. We are done with cabinet. I'm here. However, DM Kekan is going, the one she's going to lead, but I'm in the meeting.
Okay, yeah. No, I've also made that, I've made mention of that already, Honorable Sweya, that DM Kekan is going to take us through the presentation, and I've already invited her to make her opening address before the presentation is made. Honorable Katani, can you take the platform now?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and good morning to honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. And let me also join you, Chair, to congratulate Honorable Dr. Malachi for the good work, the marathon that he was able to participate in. It's a good gesture for ourselves as South Africans, as women, and as young people. Chair, today's activity will take care of the overview of the role of the DPME with regard to Section 101 intervention in the Northwest. And members of the Portfolio Committee will remember that Cabinet invoked Section 101 of the Constitution in the Northwest Province in May 2018 as an attempt to respond to community and labor unrest, including the collapse of key services to our community. And subsequent to that, the president also established an interministerial task team, which is led by Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, and by then she was the minister in the presidency responsible for planning, monitoring and evaluation, and the DG in the DPME was also assigned to lead the technical task team to support the interministerial task team. Chair, the sixth administration, which is now, the IMTT then requested Minister Nkosazana to move with the intervention responsibility to COCTA, and DPME remained with the role of secretariat and also giving technical support as well as coordination, including monitoring and reporting on the intervention. So our team from DPME worked closely with the administrator in the office of the Premier, who was appointed by the Minister of Public Service and Administration. Of course, Chair, when the DG, because the DG is with us and his team, when they'll be taking the committee through the experience and the case studies that came out, they'll be able to show the magnitude of the challenges that were there. And we see this intervention as the first of its kind, guarded, of course, because Section 101 was revoked in a few provinces, Limpopo, Eastern Cape, the Free State, and so on. But this time around, it was 10 departments that were affected in the Northwest. 5 departments on Section 101A and another 5 departments under Section 101B. But what is important, Chair, as the team will be taking the committee through, the reality is that the gravity of the challenges that were found there, DPME could not be all over. There'll be specific areas that they'll be reporting on where they focused on monitoring and evaluation of certain sectors in the department, and they'll be able to show some of those areas. And if we go into the case study and other things, I mean, one of the things that we need to also look at as the portfolio committee is and the lessons that we are learning, which we are sharing with the portfolio committee, is that going forward, it is critical that the lessons we learn through these interventions, we should make sure that the systems that we put do not collapse. So our wish at all times from monitoring and evaluation is that there shouldn't be any regression. And we are mindful of the transition that is currently in the pipeline in the Northwest of the Premiership. Of course, We are happy that the Intergovernmental Monitoring Support and Intervention Bill will soon be in place to adequately empower us to be able to deal with some of these things, not only ourselves as the department, but also the portfolio committee, to be able to make sure that stringent measures are adhered to, so that government is able to have capacity to deliver adequate services to its people. The other issue, Chair, is how do we jealously guard the interface between the political and the administrative role? So between ourselves and yourselves, the role of the Public Service Commission becomes very critical. And it is important, Chair, that our own National Treasury, learning lessons from this situation, instead of coming after the fact, there should start to be early warning systems, that we have predictive monitoring system so that we can pick up early warning before more damage is incurred. The other lesson, Chair, speaks to the capacity of the state to deliver. Do we give our public servants the necessary support? And these are some of the things that comes with the observation that DPME was able to look at. And that's why we talk of the interface between the political and the administrative role. And what will be interesting to the committee is that, did we improve service delivery through the intervention? Were we able to improve on the Auditor General's report across the departments? Were there consequence management? And those are some of the things that the portfolio committee can look at. Now, Chair, lastly, having learned from the Zondo Commission and the role that Parliament should play on oversight, it is our firm belief as the department that this portfolio committee should ask difficult questions to ourselves, and we should be able to be on our toes in ensuring that we live up to the expectations of our people in as far as service delivery is concerned. And on this note, Chair, with your permission, allow me to invite the DG, Mr. Robert Nkuna, to take members of the Portfolio Committee through the memory lane on the Section 101 intervention for the Northwest Province. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable DM. Can the DG take the platform?
Thanks, Chairperson. Good morning to you and to the honorable members. Deputy Minister Isweya, as well as EDM Ekana and colleagues in the meeting, greetings. Chair, as it has been indicated, what we are presenting today is a monitoring report of the DPME. Now, as it has been indicated, at the start of this intervention, DPME was providing secretariat services, and to an extent, we still do that. But because our mandate is that of planning, monitoring, and evaluation, we have reduced more of our role in the secretariat in favor of us focusing on monitoring. So in the manner of presenting this report, this kind of reports to the committee and parliament, there are reports that are presented by the Minister of COPTA, accompanied by the DG of COPTA, which are quite intense because they deal more with very specific implementation issues. As DPME, we have elected to focus more on monitoring what is happening to avoid a situation where DPME is a player and a referee at the same time. So we have maintained some kind of a presence in the secretariat to ensure that there is a continuity in the work that is being done at that level, whilst in the main focusing on monitoring. What that means is that is we may not be in a position to answer some of the questions, as DM has already indicated, as those questions pertain to detailed operational issues, but we are in a position to answer everything that is in accordance with the areas that we are monitoring, which we consider to be the key performance areas of the project of intervention. I will highlight the areas that we have been focusing on when it comes to monitoring, and would be in a position to answer questions pertaining to such areas. The one area is that of planning and performance, in that we as DPMA are working with the province, particularly the new DG, to ensure that there is alignment between the medium-term strategic framework and the provincial plans, because at some point there were challenges in terms of that alignment. So we have been focusing on this area. We have engaged with the DG and we are assisting. We have sent a team led by a DDG to assist the province to develop the necessary plans and also performance agreements. So that is the way that we're doing. Two, we track audit results. This is very important for us to, as one of the big measures of whether we're making progress or not. So on a regular basis, we follow on this on audit results and advise on where interventions are needed to improve the situation in the province. And as part of that, we also deal with financial indicators. We monitor performance against the financial indicators, which is very critical to lay a base for performance and service delivery in that area. We also monitor the appointment of key leadership positions in the province, and we are able to respond to our own monitoring of progress in that regard. We deal with the APP performance, we look at the annual performance plans of the different departments in the province and audit or ensure assurance that the commitments made by government are being met. We also look at progress on priority disciplinary and criminal cases. So we are in a position to can speak on this and some of the investigations that we've seen being undertaken. And lastly, as indicated in the opening remarks of the DM, we look at the legal environment, the extent to which the current legal environment allows national government to intervene, not only in this province, but also in other provinces. But while emphasis is on the legal environment, it's important that we must put early warning system in place so that we don't have to intervene. You know, so the point is not to look for interventions, but to look for ways and mechanisms to ensure that interventions should not arise going forward. So that is going to be the biggest thing that the DPME is going to focus on and make recommendations on how we build early warning systems such that going forward, we don't find ourselves in similar situations. Now, Chair, with your permission, I will ask Mr. Jonathan Tim, who has been working on the project since 2018, to present on behalf of the DPME. I need to indicate that we have prepared a presentation that runs close to an hour, and I will ask for your indulgence to be allowed to complete the presentation so that we can cover all the issues. Thank you, Chairperson. And on that note, I ask Mr. Jonathan Tim to commence with the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Jonathan, you can take the floor.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to the honorable members of the committee, the deputy ministers, the DG, and colleagues. As mentioned by DG Nkuna, we have a presentation. I would like to switch off my camera if that's acceptable in order to make the presentation. And I would like to just request confirmation that the slideshow is visible and is in presentation mode.
Chair, through you. Yes, Jonathan, you may proceed.
Thank you very much. So I will just give an overview of the presentation which we will make. We will briefly confirm the purpose of this presentation. We will then provide an overview of the implementation of Section 100. This was just a brief history of the utilization of this constitutional provision since 1996. We will then take the committee through a fairly high level summary of the Northwest case study, and then we will turn to a set of lessons learned from the intervention. I must add that the lessons we present cannot be considered an exhaustive list. We need to recognize the scale and complexity of this intervention and the multiple dimensions of the learning that has arisen from this experience at multiple levels. And we propose that the lesson learning is seen as a process rather than a once-off event. And we hope that the committee will engage further around this very rich learning opportunity for building a capable, ethical and developmental state. I will now turn to the purpose. This report is prepared in response to the request of the Portfolio Committee for a briefing by the DPME on the lessons learned and case studies regarding the implementation of Section 100 in the Northwest. Briefly, this slide provides the constitutional section that is relevant, Section 101 of the Constitution, and this recognizing that there are independent spheres of government, the authors of the Constitution included a fail-safe measure for when things go wrong within the provincial and local government spheres. So Section 100 deals with the enables the national executive to intervene in the affairs of a province where an executive obligation has not been fulfilled. And as you will be aware, Section 139 is the equivalent empowering both national and provincial government to intervene in the affairs of local government. So there are two clauses within Section 101A. Sorry, it was within Section 101. Section 101A guides the issuing of directives by the national executive. And then Section 101B enables the assuming of responsibility, direct assumption of the responsibility to the extent necessary. It should also be noted that the Constitution empowers the national executive to take any appropriate steps, and Section 101A and 1B are guidance to this. I'm now going to move to the next slide. The implementation of Section 100 since the Constitution was adopted by Parliament in 1996, we have seen Section 101A instituted in 1998 in Eastern Cape and in 1999 in the Free State. And both of these were instituted by the Minister of Finance in relation to the Department of Finance in those two. We then see in 2011 a number of interventions taking place. Both, we see the first invocation of Section 101B in the Eastern Cape and in Limpopo, and we also see Section 101A instituted in Free State. And the intervention in the Northwest in 2018 then becomes the first time that Section 101 has been invoked for an office of the Premier, the apex department in a province. This slide just provides more information in relation to the departments that have been put under Section 100 since 2011. This just illustrates the scale of the intervention of the Northwest in relation to previous experience. So here we see 10 departments being put under Section 100, 5 under 1B and 5 under 1A. And by comparison, the largest intervention, which was in Limpopo, initiated in December 2011, can see that it involved five departments, significantly provincial treasury being put under direct administration. In this intervention, while the office of the premier was put under section 101B, the provincial treasury was put under section 101A. And there has been some discussion, debate, and argument within the intervention teams of whether it is necessary to put a provincial treasury under direct intervention under section 101B when an office of the premier is deemed to be needing to go under 101B, given the role that the provincial treasury is required to play. So that's one issue for consideration, and it's certainly in discussion around the legislation. That has been one of the areas of discussion. We'll now move to the case study, and I will run through first the situation in Northwest in 2018 that necessitated the invocation of Section 100. There were, as many of you will recall, violent labor unrest and community protests which were broadcast across the country and a cause of great consternation, requiring the president to cut short an international trip to return to deal with the situation. Service delivery was paralyzed, there was violent labor unrest, and as well as community protests spreading across the province, resulting in loss of life and destruction of property. The health system had collapsed significantly to the point of requiring the deployment of the SANDF to secure essential services in the health sector. School children were being kept out of schooling. The audit results showed a year-on-year decline for 4 years straight, with the Auditor General noting a refusal to deal with issues raised, ongoing non-compliance with supply chain management laws, and a persistent lack of consequence management. There was also systemic outsourcing of service delivery to irregularly appointed project management units, and these irregular appointments ran to hundreds of millions of rands. Project management units and outsourcing arrangements were covered extensively in the national media. Names such as Mediosa, Agri Delight, Ayama, and others were reported on in the media at the time. Municipal services were in a state of collapse, requiring the intervention of SANDF in certain municipalities to deal with pressing challenges such as collapsed sewage systems. There were also allegations of rampant corruption. In terms of a timeline of key events, this is just a selection of events and focusing really on the start of the intervention and then jumping us forward to the more recent history. So the intervention really sees its beginning in the 25th of April with a cabinet decision to put the Department of Health under intervention. Then the establishment by the president of an interministerial task team under the leadership of Honorable Minister Dlamini Zuma, who led a delegation of ministers on an extensive engagement in the province with stakeholders. As a result of that and the recommendations of the IMTT, Section 100 was invoked for the entire province on May the 9th, 2018. We see agreements with Labour reached for return to work on the 21st. The then Premier, Honourable Mahuma Pelo, resigned with Honourable Wendy Nelson, the MEC for Finance, taking over as an acting Premier. On the 23rd, Cabinet specified, based on rapid assessments by all the relevant departments, specified interventions for each of the 10 departments put under intervention. The IMTT briefed the National Council of Provinces on the 14th of June 2018 for the first time. I think it's important to highlight here the role that the NCOP has played in this intervention in terms of its constitutional responsibility under Section 102, which requires the NCOP to monitor an intervention. It also gives it the responsibility to determine whether the intervention is justified. If this takes place, a Section 100 intervention by the executive automatically ends after 180 days, unless the NCOP has approved it. So there was an intensive period of NCOP oversight, which then resulted in the National Council of Provinces adopting the recommendation for the intervention to continue at the end of October 2018. Jumping forward to the more current time, the IMTT tabled a progress report to Cabinet in December 2020, and then a report to the NCOP on the 3rd of December. Some of the committee members may be aware of media reports. There was a cabinet statement to this effect that the national executive had made a decision to end or withdraw the intervention at the end of that financial year, so the end of March 2021. Subsequent to that announcement, the IMTT tabled a further progress report on the 10th of February in anticipation of a series of engagements with the ad hoc committee of the NCOP. At this cabinet meeting, based on developments in the province, the cabinet then took the view that withdrawing the intervention would be an inappropriate move given conditions in the province, and therefore the decision was then taken for the intervention to continue in its current form and for the National Executive to review progress mid-year. Just to note that the intervention continues in the same form as it was put in place at the start. The NCOP ad hoc committee went through a series of engagements, culminating in the tabling of a report in On the 23rd of June 2021, the committee's report and its recommendations were adopted. In essence, the committee, the ad hoc committee, and therefore the NCOPs resolved that the intervention should continue, and that an exit strategy should be developed and shared with the National Council of Provinces prior to its implementation. And they requested for a response or a detailed report to be tabled in September. So we are, as the support to the IMTT and all coordinating all the administrators, are in the process of compiling an in-depth review report together with lessons learned and the exit strategy. So this presentation takes place in the midst of preparations for these engagements. This slide details the composition of the IMTT in the sixth administration. As was mentioned, the minister in the presidency responsible for planning, monitoring, and evaluation is not a member of the committee, and this is a legacy. This is a result of the transition between the fifth and the sixth administration, and the then minister in the presidency moving with the responsibility to become Minister of COGTA. And when the president gave her the continued responsibility, she requested that DPME for continuity and the experience that resided within that remained in DPME for DPME to continue to play this coordination and secretariat role. So it's a legacy arrangement. A very high level summary of progress to date. Capacity for service delivery has been built through the filling of key management posts, lifting of moratorium on staff appointments in certain key service delivery departments, in particular health, investment in infrastructure, equipment, as well as efforts to improve systems that are critical for service delivery, supply chain systems, procurement systems, governance systems, oversight, capacity, project management. The audit results show a positive trend. Now we only currently have access to the 2019-20 audit findings. As you will be aware, the 2021 findings will be available in the next month or so. But we see a turnaround in the audit results and positive commentary by the Auditor General of the impact of the intervention. So there was 4 years of decline and 1 year of stagnation when the intervention started. So the previous year's audit results did not change. They didn't get worse, but they didn't get better. And for 6 months of that audit period, the intervention had been in place. But it was very pleasing to see a significant improvement in audit outcomes in the year 2019-20, where the intervention had been fully responsible for the whole year. So irregular project management units have been closed, outsourcing terminated, getting the appointed officials empowered to do their work has been an important focus during this intervention period. And processes are underway to recover losses to the state as a result of these irregular contracts. There are also certain criminal investigations underway. The National Treasury has led a process of capacity building across departments to strengthen supply chain management. Community and labor peace has been maintained through ongoing engagements, and particularly around labor peace, through ongoing engagement with workers on issues of concern. Alignment of planning between departments to deliver on service delivery has priorities has been a priority, particularly for the Office of the Premier, which has shifted its orientation, role and configuration to play its required role of oversight and monitoring of service delivery departments. And this, what had happened in the fifth administration, which was a concentration or centralization of functions and budget under the Premier's office, has been reversed. Criminal investigations, prosecutions, and asset forfeiture are underway in relation to corruption cases. This, as we will see in our lessons, continues to be a source of frustration, the slow progress made there. Just a chart to demonstrate the turnaround of irregular expenditure. You will see this. So this provides in-year irregular expenditure. Understanding irregular expenditure it's important to make a distinction between, cumulative irregular expenditure and in-year irregular expenditure. Cumulative expenditure accumulates year on year. Any historic irregular expenditure that has not been condoned simply accumulates. So it's important to see trends to look at the in-year. So you can see 2018-19 was the peak for the departments. We're looking at departments under direct intervention here: the Office of the Premier, Health, Safety, Community Safety and Transport Management, Education and Public Works. And you can see that between 2018 and 2019 was a peak for all the departments. We see the intervention starting in May, and in July 2018, where the administrators got on board, got into office. and we see a decline in the next year. And then the last figure of 2021, figures from the National Treasury, unaudited, recognizing that they are unaudited. However, the trend continues, and it's a positive one. Here we see the audit findings in terms of disclaimers and qualifications and unqualified audits. And the column on the left, far left of all of those colorful columns is the most recent. And you can see an increase, a significant increase in the number of greens, slightly marred by that red of public of human settlements, which is a new department which received the disclaimer. And the National Department of Human Settlements are working hard to address the causes of that disclaimer. But in essence, it is a result of a dispute between who the accounting officer was and provision of documents to the AG, and that has been resolved. So we should see a significant change in the next set of audit results. The slides that follow provide a summary of progress department by department, as well as looking at outstanding priorities, remaining priorities. I'm not going to go through this in detail. I think it's just a summary provided, and I'll just pick up one or two things from each department. In the Office of the Premier, I think the achievements must be noted that the improvements in controls and governance resulted in the first unqualified audits in 5 years. And the appointment of the new Director General is seen as a very important milestone in terms of preparing a stable provincial government for the Northwest. In the Department of Health, similarly, the appointment of a new HOD is very important. The previous HOD was dismissed, and similarly, other senior managers and lower level officials have been dismissed on charges of corruption and dereliction of duty. If we look at outstanding priorities for these two departments, critical, essential is managing a credible process for the appointment of vacant HOD positions. Currently, there are four vacant positions and one appointment under review by the Minister of Public Service and Administration. So ensuring that there are credible appointments made through credible processes is a key priority for the intervention in the Office of the Premier. Northwest Department of Health, one of the systemic challenges they face is a budget one, where, and this is included in the recommendations by the NCRP, that in order to get the health department on a sustainable footing, there needs to be a fit for purpose budget. So the budget baseline needs to be corrected. Another key focus area is the work that is being done to improve the medicine supply chain in the province. Been plagued with problems. Director of Pharmacy has been dismissed, and there are all sorts of problems unearthed there. Department of Education emphasizes the building capability for infrastructure, school delivery infrastructure program. To that extent, we've appointed technical expertise for school construction projects and done 12 forensic investigations. 5 cases have been referred to the Hawks as a result of these. Priorities there include appointments to be made, as well as consequence management for these cases. In terms of the Northwest Community Safety and Transport Management, big ticket items there were around investigation of learner contracts, big contracts. The learner transport contract, SA Express and security contracts, those have been terminated and regularized, and are in a process of appointing, of putting new contracts in place. This has been a challenging process with tender processes having to be restarted due to non-compliance with prescripts within the provincial department. And so that is a priority that is being addressed by the intervention to ensure that the province is left with credible, regular and legal contracts in place for these critical, especially the learner transport and security contracts. The Department of Public Works, I think the appointment of the HOD is a critical, and the chief directors for facilities at building and infrastructure are absolutely critical. The condemnation of outstanding irregular expenditure is also noted there. As you will have perhaps read in the media, the HOD was dismissed in June this year, a very protracted disciplinary process. He was charged, suspended in 2018, but finally that has been concluded, allowing for the appointment processes to begin, which will be a critical a milestone for that department. I'm not going to run through the Section 101A departments in any detail, save to say that the Northwest Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs Department is being closely supported by National COGTA and its agency MISA and the National Treasury in order to, so the National Treasury working with the Provincial and Treasury to address the challenges in local government, which are have been widely reported and are a source of ongoing concern. Department of Human Settlements, I think I've covered that. The appointment of a substantive HOD and CFO are critical there. Social development, a new HOD has been appointed, the national department is, together with public works, are focusing on addressing this outstanding challenge of officer accommodation, which is not unique to the Northwest province. Department of Tourism has effectively wrapped up their support through the intervention and with the abolishment of the department. They continue to support the function within the provincial department. Let me now move to the lessons learned. We've clustered these lessons in five thematic areas. We'll look at the legislative environment, the capacitation and resourcing of intervention teams, the more operational lessons learned there. Then we get to the very important area of managing the political administrative interface, lessons learned around consequence management and criminal investigations, and then some lessons also derived from the Limpopo and Eastern Cape experience around exiting and sustaining the gains of the intervention. So I think it's already been stated that this intervention provides a wealth of learning for our constitutional and state building project. It should be noted that the intervention team has been has included the drafters from COGTA of the IMC bill at a number of key milestones, and we continue to engage around ensuring that the lessons learned in this process are wrestled with in the legislative process. But some of the lessons learned include the need for clarification of powers and functions of the provincial executive and legislative leadership. So, you know, where the national executive has invoked Section 100 for an entire province. The provincial executive council, throughout this process, we've sought legal advice from the state law advisor, which has produced a body of quite useful legal opinion and consolidation of case law. So this has been one of the areas of attention, and I think where we've learned some valuable lessons. Another area where lessons have been learned is around managing the transition from one administration to another under conditions of intervention. This intervention straddled the fifth and the sixth administration. And there was certainly a strongly held view amongst a certain segment of the provincial exco, which was not party political. It straddled a number of political parties' representatives in the legislature, that the intervention did not apply to the sixth parliament, sixth legislature, or sixth administration. That was clarified by the state law advisor that in fact it did. It applied to the executive obligation under question and not a particular administration or legislature. The need for clear lines of accountability for administrators deployed by intervening ministers, because given the spheres of government, an accounting officer in a provincial department accounts to the MEC, and administrators were given the roles in this intervention of accounting officers. Therefore, in terms of well-worn practice, were accountable to the MECs. Now, then the MEC still had a role to play politically in the EXCOs. So clarifying those lines of responsibilities is really important, particularly where there was contestation around the intervention. We had examples and instances where you had very good cooperation between the national minister, the MEC, and the administrator, where they really worked in together as a coherent team to drive the necessary reforms. In other cases, you had provincial MECs in conflict with the administrators expecting certain level of compliance to instructions that the administrators felt were inappropriate. So these were the kind of nitty-gritties of that were important learning experiences. Similarly, the clarification of the role of the Premier, when the office of the Premier has been taken over by a national minister, in this case, the Minister of Public Service and Administration. So, the devil's in the detail. One doesn't often anticipate some of these challenges until one's in the operational environment. I think I've spoken to the last point regarding the drafting of the legislation. Capacitation and resourcing of intervention teams is the next thematic area. I think it's a common sense principle that may not be as easily applied given the complexities of an intervention. It's our lessons, our view is that when the national executive decides to intervene under Section 101B in particular, the intervention team must be sufficiently equipped and experienced to assume temporary control of all parts of a target department. That's because as much as one can do a preliminary diagnostic, one learns on the job and one learns in the space. And so moving into a space and assuming control, it doesn't have to be hostile, but assuming control for all dimensions of a particular department gives line of sight across the full system. And that would be really important for the second phase of planning that would necessarily follow arrival and putting in office. So that needs to be done as quickly and as competently as possible. Drawing out an intervention due to undercapacitation results in increased opportunities for resistance and pushback, which will frustrate a swift and effective turnaround of problems. So we think about a kind of immediate this would obviously be context appropriate, but an immediate takeover of a given department, then work closely with the incumbency management to hand back as rapidly as possible where there are no, where things are normal and functional. We also argue for, based on this experience, of the establishment of a project office to manage and resource the intervention as a single project, although it may be implemented by a number of departments across multiple provincial departments, in order to manage and resource common challenges that will occur across the departments. Things like disciplinary hearings, forensic investigations, providing legal and contract support, and security. This both for economies of scale and utilization of scarce resources, but also for policy enhancement, and also for putting in place special dispensations, for example, which I'll touch later, around trying to fast track disciplinary processes, as well as perhaps criminal processes. We also note that given the time that an intervention can take, there's a risk that an intervening team under the leadership of an administrator in the province may, over time, particularly if there's a change in DGs or a change in executive management at the intervening department, there is a potential for that intervention team to become orphaned and not adequately resourced in the face of competing resourcing challenges. And so we argue that one of the lessons we learned is that if a national department is intervening and has an intervention team, the responsible DG performance agreement should include results from the intervention to ensure that there is accountability in the right place. We also argue for creating standing capacity located at the center of government to maintain a level of readiness for intervening. Now, obviously, this should not, this should not be full-time jobs necessarily, exclusively, given that we don't want to be, we want to intervene less than more. But similar to a disaster management capability where you have preparation in terms of identified people, roles, responsibilities, and you have your knowledge products well accessible, as well as your resources well organized for when an intervention is required. Often the speed of the crisis that necessitates intervention means that one really wants to be well prepared and have some standing capability. Then moving to more operational level, we argue as well that when a national department intervenes in a provincial department, there needs to be sufficient insulation of the intervening team from potential dysfunctionality within supply chain and procurement and HR systems in the target department. There could be either systems that are not that are poorly functioning, but there also are potential for frustrating the efforts of the intervention. We argue for the National Treasury to recover funds, to make funds available, and then to recover that funding from the provincial allocations. We also note that national departments such as DPME may require additional funding in the case of interventions, as these may be unfunded mandates or result in irregular expenditure. IT connectivity, tools of trade, secure IT connections, effective communication must be provided for the intervention teams. Often one finds there are multiple challenges in the area in which you're trying to intervene. So it's important that the intervention team is not subjected to the challenges that it is trying to solve in the sense of its operational capability. Similarly, secure accommodation with preference that intervention teams are accommodated as a unit, which will improve the ability to protect those teams. We really emphasized this point, not only in the Northwest, but the accounts from people intervening in the Eastern Cape as well as Limpopo. Security and protection are a critical component of ensuring that those tasked with making tough decisions in a hostile environment are able to make decisions without having to weigh up the risk to themselves, physical risk to themselves and their families. There's a need for well-capacitated and attentive ongoing security threat assessments and response to that. It's quite unfortunate that the security arrangements for the administrators became a political football in the media. Quite inappropriate, I think, and frustrating to those whose lives were under threat. This idea that somehow having a personal protector was some kind of status perk. Now, this is a critical area of learning, and I think a new frontier for discourse in our country, where we need to be able to encourage much more candid conversations around the realities of government. So the administration, certainly the part that DPME was involved in as a technical support, and is administrative in focus. It's a technical intervention in the administration, but this administrative intervention must deliver results in a contested political environment where forces both inside and outside of the formal structures of government seek to frustrate and undermine the efforts of the intervening teams. And I think, you know, it's important to recognize that this is not party political, you know, to simply say this is a ruling party problem, because the challenges that gave rise to the need for intervention are not limited to a particular political party. They cross political party lines with particular interest groups. So we note that, I think I've covered this, the threats that the administrators and intervention teams have faced. I think the strategy with those that were opposing the cleanup of the province tried to drive a wedge between the people, the deployees on the ground in the form of administrators, and the national ministers responsible for the intervention. And so there were a number of media campaigns where individual administrators were targeted, mud was thrown at them, there, you know, all sorts of allegations of impropriety, corruption, et cetera, were fed to friendly journalists, creating a very unhealthy and potentially dangerous situation for the administrators. And you could see it was clearly an attempt to drive a wedge between the more vulnerable aspects of the intervention. So again, the planning, resourcing, and implementing of intervention teams requires a recognition that they take place in dysfunctional and potentially hostile environments where administrative systems and other systems have been weakened and corrupted. So therefore, we argue that delivering positive results in this kind of environment requires close cooperation between the political, administrative, and security functions involved in an intervention. And this should be at all stages, from pre-planning through to exit. And we note that these areas of influence, political, administrative, and security, each have their own complexity and their own dynamics. It's important in the interest of building the state, the capable state, and addressing problems that are affecting people on the ground, that that a given intervention creates mechanisms and platforms for these three spheres to work with common purpose. Then finally, looking forward, the professionalization of the public service, as outlined in the National Development Plan, really needs to be accelerated, as well as mentioned by the Deputy Minister, reinforcing the role of the Public Service Commission is also a lesson that we are putting forward. The penultimate slide, I've two more slides to go, Chair, looks at the consequence management and criminal investigations, internal disciplinary processes and criminal investigations. So as mentioned, the intervention teams have faced slow progress in disciplinary processes and criminal investigations. And the reasons for this have included the reliance on provincial resources, legal and HR, to run disciplinary processes. And as I mentioned earlier, as a case study, the HOD for Public Works was charged in September 2018. The disciplinary hearing was concluded with a dismissal in June 2021. This was a very frustrating process. There, one of the things is repeated delays and postponements on medical grounds. There was also a lack of capacity and dedicated teams from outside of the province available to investigate, coordinate, and manage disciplinary processes. And I think one of the things that would be an important area of, for the committee to consider is to look at, what is the state and status of the government's capacity to run a credible, independent, impartial, speedy disciplinary processes. The experience that we noted was a weakness in the state system around this. You know, obviously when you're running a disciplinary process, it's ideal to have people from outside of a province and from the particular political economy of a province. Sometimes people's lives are actually at threat depending on what decisions they're going to make if they come from a particular area. We also, I think the challenges within the law enforcement space are well known and well documented, but it nevertheless continues to have impact and resulting in slow and frustrating conclusion of criminal investigations. This has been as a major focus for the ad hoc committee, who called various law enforcement agencies repeatedly to account. There has been a significant increase in capacity of the Serious Commercial Crimes Unit as a result of the engagements by the IMTT. Still we can't say we have turned the boat around. Again, the lack of capacity, let me go to the next one. The lack of cooperation from provincial departmental officials, fearing for their safety and jobs after the intervention is withdrawn. So this is really a chicken and egg situation. If you have good cooperation from departmental officials, you're going to have witnesses, evidence, etc., and you're going to be able to conclude processes which will result in wrongdoers being excluded and prosecuted. However, if you cannot guarantee an effective process and someone is a witness and that process fails, they are going to be at risk once the intervention withdraws. We also note a lack of capacity within government for investigating complex commercial crimes. We also argue that the current approach of outsourcing under the leadership of National Treasury in a number of instances to private forensic audit firms should be looked at as a policy question, and whether it provides the most effective value for money, as opposed to building capacity within the police and the NPA and other agencies. So an insourcing model rather than outsourcing model. Certainly some of the lessons learned around this space were that some of the appointments of forensic investigators who charged by the hour were not necessarily delivering the kind of information that prosecutors needed. One of the interventions we made was to make sure that prosecutors and investigating officers were part of the development of terms of reference for forensic investigations. But there is quite a rich set of lessons learned in that space. So as I mentioned, and I've mentioned some of them, strategies have been put in place by the IMTT. But critical to the practice of intervening and governing more broadly is the lack of rapid and visible consequence management. It creates a culture of impunity amongst wrongdoers. It maintains institutional cultures that are inappropriate and wrong, and result in a wait-and-see approach from people who would otherwise support the intervention. My final slide, Chair, is some lessons derived around exiting and sustaining the gains of the intervention. The experience from the Limpopo intervention points to the importance of invoking Section 101A when withdrawing the Section 101B interventions. This was a recommendation made to Cabinet. So a phased approach of tapering the intervention rather than a kind of waterfall approach of just going, you know, from full intervention to nothing. Again, as emphasized by the Deputy Minister in her opening remarks, it's critical that there is oversight and monitoring after the withdrawal of the 101Bs and of the compliance to the directives issued to ensure progress, impact, and sustainability. The reporting on the directives, we argue, should be done regularly to Cabinet to guard against regression. Interventions need to be formally closed out and a formal closeout report submitted to the NCOP to ensure that knowledge and experience is preserved. And the development or movement towards the creation of a government-wide digital planning, monitoring, and evaluation system may preempt the need for interventions and or preempt problems and detect compliance issues. That is our report, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The report is now open for discussion. I see that Honorable Julie has raised hand, Honorable Kibi and Honorable McClure, in that order. Honorable Julie, I will note all others. I have your hands now on the platform.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much for the presentation. It was quite a lengthy presentation, and I suppose it goes along with the period of the intervention to Northwest Province since 2018. It's been a long time. Now I wanted to check just few things, Chair. Chair, the portfolio committee, this portfolio committee, met with the Northwest government led by Premier Mokgoro. There were still a lot of discrepancies. Taking note that the intervention started in 2018 and now we are towards the end of 2021. One is not just pouring just water on the work that has been done by DPME, but uh,
Chair, I'm a bit worried, but I wanted all of us together with DPME to check if really their view on Section 100 as a tool, whether it's secure, most probably bureaucratic systems or it intervenes to service delivery as a key component for the existing government in any province or in any country. Hence, it was mentioned earlier on that even the service delivery had collapsed in Northwest during that period. How are they viewing it? Is it driving us straight to the point or much as it is driving us to the point, but we've got a lot of holes? I mean, for the people of Northwest, it's government and period and nothing else. For them, they want to see service delivery on the ground. It wasn't the first of its kind. There were some provinces mentioned that have been applied to the same system. So how best really is this assisting us as government? About two, I think it's DG. DG mentioned that as DPME, you also applied the early warnings mechanism. Now, I wanted also to check on that note, on that point, to say how best has the early warning mechanism assisted a government. If they may highlight one or two examples, for me, the all early warnings are more preferable other than coming towards the tail end and always complaining or always looking for solutions other than preventing. In terms of performance agreements, you see, I wanted also to check as to say when and how does it apply and be felt by the one who signed that performance agreement, because there were a lot of cases. There were a lot of cases, and you begin to say, were these people aware whether they're working for government or whether they should observe 1, 2, 3 or whether it was just a banana republic? You know, when and how does it being applied hard on a person? If you've signed a performance agreement, why do we sign a performance agreement? If people sign a performance agreement and if they can maybe tell us brief us shortly on that one, according to their view, according to their view. Then going to audit reports. Chair and the meeting, I don't know whether we can find something to write home about the audit reports other than what is happening on the ground, the actuals that are on the ground. Because for me, we can count so many unqualified reports for the province, but the best report that will tell everyone the direction for Northwest is when Northwest will be left to handle issues on their own other than the administration. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Kibi.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning, Honorable members and colleagues. Honorable Chair, let me welcome and appreciate the presentation and also the progress made thus far from the interventions. Honorable Chair, I want to know on the issue of e-education. On e-education, Chair, did the district education organizational structure collapse because there were vacancies, or is it because there were vacancies or because organized labor was in conflict with it? And I also want to know, since this task is still outstanding, what is the position presently with the structure? Is there a buy-in from organized labor that is now education? On health, Honorable Chair, is the outstanding task to correct the budget baseline at the Department of Health as a result of it being inflated to accommodate corruption, or is it because it was underfunded due to unforeseen reasons? And on the issue of the Office of the Premier, for how long was the position of HOD in the Office of the Premier, and who was or is still responsible for the roles fulfilled by these officials during the vacancy? And I thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kibi. Honorable McClure.
Yeah, thank you so much, Chairperson. And thank you to TPME for this presentation. I think the biggest challenge for DPME now, maybe after this meeting, is to deal with the current problems that we are having in the Northwest as well, and especially deal with an exit strategy of someone who claims he wants to see the president first before he resigns. But Chair, we can spin this around the way we want, but I am in total disagreement that this has nothing to do with party politics. Purely, factionalism has played a role in what we are seeing today. And the laughing stock that has been made out of the administration, who has been treated like executives was the result of factionalism. I walked the roads in the Northwest. I drove the roads in the Northwest at the time of these riots. I was a member at the time at this particular legislature. And there was something called toll fees that we had to pay to go from one destination to another destination. So this is a very good presentation, but it lacks a lot of content on some issues that I think we as a portfolio committee should perhaps peruse further. If you look at what we have been saying of what happened with the Agri Delight, what happened with Medihosa, I think what we need in return of what is presented here to us is the progress of what has transpired out of that cases. Because we want to see people behind bars. We want to see people wearing an orange overall. It is not happening. The learner transport that has been referred to has been owned at the time with this problem that we had by some MEC members in that legislature. And following the presentation pertaining to the timelines, Chairperson, and the key events that has transpired, and I must categorically say it, not once has the legislature been mentioned as a stakeholder. And you know why? Because factionalism has played a role. We at the time was a multi-party organization, a multi-party provincial parliament, but not once has the inter-ministerial committee engaged with the provincial legislature. Now, in terms of the lessons learned, maybe we should also say, how will we remedy the situation as far as the role of the legislature at the time? So that is what's important. The question pertaining to the functions previously centralized by the former Honorable Supramao Mapelo. Yes, it was a kind of a backdoor move to control deals. And what happened at the time when some of the functions of municipalities was taken to the premier's office? Some of the municipalities has even, you know, in terms of spending, underspend millions of rands. So these are the kind of information that we need. Alongside with what we need, Chairperson, is the criminal investigations. What is the progress as far as those criminal investigations is concerned? Another interesting factor is that mentioning has been made about a report being tabled to cabinet. That has actually become a state secret because I attempted in the past many a times to get this report. This report has never surfaced to the public out there. And I want to challenge DPME to tell us whether it has. And if it has, I apologize, but they must make it available to this committee. Now, here's my $1 question. And where I think DPME and the rest of government is quiet about. What was the cost of this intervention? We spoke about the security protection of administrators since 2018. What was the cost of that protection for those administrators? And there's this sound confusion as to whether the Northwest is still under administration or not. We must get clarity as to when this administration is going to be lifted. Now, there's one department, and I think DPME is aware about that. COXA. It went from bad to worse.
But there was interventions. What are we doing about that interventions? And I don't think a lot has been said about consequence management. And perhaps in terms of consequence management in the various respective portfolios and roles, maybe we should also get a report from that. And what has been reported here today is again sound proof that we need a portfolio committee under the DPME office to have a complete oversight on what is transpiring in cases like this in the Northwest. Now, emphasis were also laid on the social development. Now, at the time before us, if the honorable members can recall that the PSC has reported that there's someone within this organization in social development who is unqualified. Now, we need clarity whether DPME has verified the qualifications and safe to say even that was also under the auspices of the former Supra Maomapelo. Now, on community and safety, which is for me a very important portfolio as well, the Section 100 administrator is also heading some board where he is a CEO. So I think we need some clarity whether that is within the law, because I believe that one cannot report to oneself. But I think, and I want to say this, as long as the ANC government in the Northwest is not going to address the factionalism, we will not get the service that we want. Because the advisor, the special advisor to the current incumbent who don't want to resign, he is now earmarked to become the premier of this province. So I am saying to honorable members here that DPME has a job ahead of them, and I just want to wish them well with what is happening. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Komani.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let us also join in acknowledging the report that is presented by the department. But Chair, one would first want to also understand on what were the reasons for the intervention in the Northwest. Chair, also, having noted that there are vacant posts of HODs in the office of the Premier, who is then responsible to fulfill those roles, the duties that are to be fulfilled by the person who has to be appointed into the that position? And in terms of the case study presented by the department now, in terms of the audit results, what is the progress in addressing the non-compliance and consequences that are being put in place? Chair, when we speak to the community safety and the transport, one would categorically state that it is very sad, because this department has been protected by members of the legislature. And one would further ask this question, because we know the protection that has been given by the same. What are the reasons for this bus company to be moved out of liquidation? Because we have heard that this bus company has been moved out of liquidation. And why is there a reliance on this single company? Are there no other companies that we should consider into this matter? And further, Chair, one would as well ask whether this company, this entity, is it of the department or is it a private company? This question is raised because we see so much protection given to this company, and so much is being done to protect the same company to keep it in this department. Given the state that it is in, given the service that it has been rendering to the people of Northwest. Chair, when we move to the condonation of the 4.3 billion, we need to ask why and what are the reasons for this condonation. One would then assume, maybe one would be wrong. Was this condemnation because there was no likelihood of the recovery? Or maybe we would be taken into confidence as to why this condemnation. And Chair, when we speak to COPTA, one is speaking here because we are members from the Northwest. And since 2018, if you can take an example, Mamusa Municipality was dissolved. And it has gone to the west. Where we are seated now, Chair, with the intervention given by the department, we are sitting at 5 municipalities which are yet to be dissolved, Chairperson. And what are the main challenges in these municipalities, given the same intervention by the 1600? And what is the redress that has been sought by the DPM, ME and COPTA in this regard? Because we cannot have an intervention yet, we still find municipalities getting from better to worse. And Chair, again, in the finalization of priority disciplinary cases, what does this term priority mean? And what does this case, the priority cases, entail? How are these cases, what is the percentage of these cases which have been finalized so far? And what are the reasons for those that are not yet finalized? And can we be taken into confidence as to when, given the time frame, when would they be finalized? Because we always would find, would be given reasons to say there would be a postponement due to ill health, there would be non-cooperation. But Chair, we need to finalize this matter. And we need to know if there are matters that need to be referred to law enforcement agencies. I think I must echo the sentiment with the latter speaker to say, we now need results. We now need to see people behind bars. But this is not happening. And we are hearing of priority cases that have been reported. Chair. And on slide 4 of the presenter, it is stated on slide 24, it is stated that there is lack of cooperation from the departmental officials. One would then ask the question, are we likely to yield results in this regard if there is no cooperation because people are fearing of their employment or if people are fearing that amid this intervention, they would not protected in terms of their employment. Are we now interested in how people would be protected in terms of their employment, or are we looking at getting this province better? And one would then not understand. And Chair, when we speak of the intervention into the premier, into the premier's office, the members of this portfolio committee would recall when we were engaging with the premier of the province. There was this sort of, we would hear that there is like conflict between the administrators and his office. But then how is this assisting us? Because we found that the premier is personally engaging in other departments, not even recognizing the MECs in those departments. Like we asked him of the intervention that he was leading to the Bojanala district, to the Rustenburg and Madibeng municipalities, particularly based on the service delivery issues.
that we're speaking of water that has been that has to be supplied to the communities. But the same premier, when we speak service delivery, we cannot speak service delivery by taking people of the province from the better to the west. We are now seeing people of Rustenburg 29 not having water. They are now referred to use the they are not using wheelbarrows. They do not have water. With the intervention of the same premier, and the same premier, and I would also want to echo the sentiment to say we should not hide this fact that these are party political issues that has brought us here. So how far is how is this administration assisting in this regard? Because we find this premier's office being in the center, and the same premier is seemed to be law unto himself. He's not even going to resign until he's been given this special treatment, this audience to the president. But we are speaking of the service delivery. We are speaking of the livelihoods of the people in the Northwest. And this does not it does not even arise to say how is service delivery being addressed, because the bone of contention, the reason, I hope the reason for the intervention was to see the people of Northwest being living in a better way. But it is not done. It is really not done. And I'm afraid to say, I'm not necessarily, I'm prepared to ask this question. Is this intervention, Chairperson, yielding any fruit? If they are yielding any fruit, we wouldn't be seeing the Department of Health deteriorating the way it is. We wouldn't to date be having the Department of Social Development where we had allegations that there's a person who's underqualified. Yet this report does not speak to that, to say how is this matter being addressed. Thank you, Chair, for now.
Honorable Malomane.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also join by welcoming the presentation on the case studies and the lessons learned. Let me also say good morning to honorable members. Good morning to DM Kekana, DM Swear, the DG, and everyone in the committee. Chair, my question, it will be based on the issue of the cases. I just want to find out how many cases have been finalized and how many cases are still outstanding. I can see that this report is a good report, but it doesn't have timelines on when are they going to be finished, because there are still the outstanding priorities. When are these outstanding priorities going to be finalized? I think it will really appreciate if they can send us a report which is having the timeline on the outstanding priorities so that we can check, so that we can make sure that we do our own oversight, so that while we are checking the timeline to say when are they going to be done. The other thing that I want to say is to say we are doing very well. We are trying by all your means. We can see that there is a progress. We really appreciate it. This, it shows on the improvement in the AGS findings. I won't speak about this as you've presented. I think what we need to make sure is that we will do our own oversight on a daily basis to monitor whatever that has been presented to us that is happening. And I was really covered by the other things that our honorable members have said. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Kondwe.
Let me also join in the appreciation of the presentation. Chair, I have a number of questions, and they flow from the presentation as presented by Mr. Trim. Regarding the IMTT, I note that this task team is made up of various cabinet members. I wanted clarity on what exactly the role of this IMTT is and how often it meets. because I was under the impression that it also, much like the NCOP, has an obligation to monitor the progress made with regards to the intervention. Because I see that under the timeline, you've indicated that it reports back to the NCOP. So I just want to get clarity on what the responsibility of this inter-ministerial task team is. And I was going to ask, and you answered me partially around the role of the presidency in this MITT, because I feel it should form part and parcel of this MITT, given that DPME is also helping in terms of tracking audit results and advising and monitoring performance against performance indicators and the like. So I wanted to get clarity on the role of the MITT. And with regards to the Office of the Premier, I think Honorable Komani just touched on the issue around the Premier, and I wanted to know whether the impending change in premiership will have an impact on the intervention, given that, you know, people have different leadership styles, et cetera. So I just wanted to get an idea from the DPME whether they see that having an impact, if any, on the intervention. And then I am comforted by the fact that there have been a number of achievements, which include, amongst others, appointments in key positions, clean audits, and the revision of SCM policies in some of the departments. And I really hope that the outstanding priorities are addressed, especially those relating to critical departments, such as the Department of Health. We all know that the Department of Health is currently at the core phase of service delivery in terms of our fight against the pandemic. And I'm happy to know that there was a new HOD appointed, and I wanted to find out when, this HOD was appointed. As I indicated, we're in a very critical time, in the fight against the pandemic, and it's very important that we have leadership in critical departments, such as the Department of Health. And then my other question, is around the lessons. You indicate that the intervention was the most extensive, but also the most complex. And I wanted to find out why you thought it was complex. Do you think the fact that so many departments were put under, Section 100, either, Section 101 A or B, contributed to the complexity, of the intervention? And with regards to the forthcoming regulations and the legislation, you mentioned something about regulations and legislation around interventions. Are you able to provide us with an update on the progress that has been made with regards to the regulations and the legislations in this regard? And you make reference to the fact that there's a task team that is taking the lead in, the drafting of the formulation of these regulations and the legislation. Is the DPME, part and parcel of this task team? And I wondered around the lessons that you have, shared with us and articulated, have you been able to share your insight on the lessons with cabinet or the IMTP, the inter-ministerial task team in this regard? Because you make a number of important observations and recommendations, especially those relating to the threats of intimidation that were faced by administrators and members of the intervention task team, and the slow progress in disciplinary processes and in the criminal investigations, and the question of whether national treasury or provincial treasury should bear the cost of the intervention. I think those are very important observations and recommendations, and I wanted to know whether you were going to share those with the IMTP. And then I also wanted to find out that, okay, so you've made these observations and these recommendations. So what happens to them? And this ties in with whether or not you're going to share these with the IMTP. What happens to your recommendations and your observations around the whole intervention process? They've obviously got to yield something or, you know, be able to contribute to something, to a broader picture. And I wanted to know, you know, so what's going to happen next once you've made these observations and recommendations? Thank you. That's all from my side, Chairperson. Ke a leboga.
Honorable Soma.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and good morning, colleagues, and led by from the department, led by the both DMs, but led by Honorable DM Kekane and also all the officials on the platform. Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity. There are just about 5 points that I would like to talk to. Firstly, that from where I'm seated, I'm quite happy that it flows out, the presentation that we are receiving today, I will say DPME as a secretariat, flows from our last week's engagement with the Honorable Prima. Having noted Honorable DM Kekana's opening remarks, but I'll put a rider to say whether the political faces or the warm bodies changes, but the Northwest government is there to stay. So for me, it should be a continuation whether the warm bodies changes or not. So even when there will be a new premier and the executive, we still continue in terms of raising issues and doing our oversight, as it were. Secondly, Chair, Honorable DM Kekane spoke to that from the committee point of view, I hope I'm speaking on behalf of all of us, is that we are looking forward for the DPME legislative reform that will raise the bar in terms of them being not only oversight and assessed, but to come out, legally speaking, with an interventionist approach, as it were, where there are problems or they have observed potential challenges, as it were, because prevention is better than cure. Thirdly, Chair, I would suggest, if you'll agree with me, that your office, with we should seek an audience with a project leader, which is COCTA, and have a fixed date within this term, and also invite a Northwest Public Service Commissioner, as well as DPSA, because they do have a role indirectly in terms of ensuring that disciplinary cases are speeded up, so that all of these departments or bodies should also give us a concrete timeline in terms of the issues and what are the bottlenecks. If we can, as this committee, unblock those bottlenecks, we'd let it do so. Fourthly, Chair, I will suggest that immediately after the new leader, political leadership is in place in the Northwest, we do seek a platform with the Premier to make him alive on the issues and our fears that the progress that we have been updated about today, it doesn't then go back under as a wasted effort that has been done, which will include the slow pace of disciplinary actions and also filling of vacant posts, critical posts, as has been reported. The fifth point, Chair, that I would like to talk to is that if your office, through the content advisor or the research person, I'm not too sure who would be doing that, let's get the issues that the AG and the issues that the audit committee highlighted or lifted them up so that we can take them. Because COPA deals with the water under the bridge, but as this committee and other oversight team committees, we deal with the current issues, so that we will also make a dent in terms of improving the performance of the Northwest province in terms of service delivery and effective and efficient service delivery, as it were. Towards the last point, Chair, I think as this committee, because when you are dealing with the Northwest, you are dealing with the whole government, as it were, probably we might also take an interest and prioritize some of the departments that you are health departments, premier's office, and those ones who deliver directly the basic services to the communities through local government. I've spoken to this one, but I'll just make an emphasis that if the Northwest 2019-20 AG's report can be shared with us through your office, Chair, I know we can get it, But I'm raising that so that we can get it formally, so that we can be able formally at this level of the portfolio committee and engage with it. My closing point, Chair, is to say I'm sure what we are seeking to do is to deal with the problem, not to come with some other reasons that will also delay dealing with the problem. And I'm sure the law enforcement agency, which is an outstanding engagement with us through your office, you will also through this within this term of office, this quarter maybe, let me use that word, within this quarter, that we'll be able to engage with the law enforcement agency so that they can unblock the frustrations that we have in this closeness of closing the cases and also recouping the monies that have been taken unfairly by whoever, as it were. Other than that, Honorable Chair, thank you very much. We'll be looking forward to the multidisciplinary IMC task team when they come before us within this quarter. Thank you very much, Chair.
Look, can I check? I see that Honorable Nduli's hand is up and Honorable Bond. Do you want to make a second bite?
I'm so sorry, Chair. It's
sorry,
a lazy
Chair,
one.
It's a legacy hand. Sorry, Chair.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Bending,
okay. No. That's noted. Can I now invite the department to respond to whatever was raised by honorable members?
Chairperson, it's Pingi Kikana DM. Thank you very much, Chair, and let me welcome the inputs and observations that honorable members have made. Of course, the officials will respond to the nitty-gritties that members were also asking. But I thought it is important for us to understand the reason for the intervention and the process thereof. That once national government identifies challenges through legislation, and if it affects provinces, the NCOP also gets involved so that this section, which is section 101, is revoked. And that's why from time to time we will also have the province and the NCOP being engaged from time to time. But the reality, Chair, is that once that is done, President puts together an interministerial task team. Now, if you look at the Northwest situation, it's 10 departments under Section 100, the five departments on 1B, the five on 1A. Now, transport, even the Minister of Transport, if it's this department. So line departments get linked to the national line departments. And that's why, in terms of content and the day-to-day running of some of the challenges that we picked up that led to the collapse of service delivery, national department that has been there, it's able to report to the IMTT to say, this is the depth of the situation and this is how the intervention is being done. So the fact that we are here with the portfolio committee means it was also going to be easier and better if the IMT's report was presented and the DPSA report, so that it becomes a comprehensive approach that you get the line function departments through the IMTT led by Dr. Nkosazana. However, even the report that we are presenting today to the portfolio committee, we ran it through our leading, the leader of the IMTT, which is the Minister of Culture, to say this is what we're going to present. And everything that we're presenting, it's in line with what the IMTT has been dealing with. So we were looking more on the monitoring part, and we couldn't be all over, because at least 10 national departments that were linked to the 10 national provincial departments at least have all those nitty-gritties, which will help the portfolio committee to at least have an appreciation of some of the challenges that confronted the province. I like the way forward that Honorable Lusuma is also giving, to say it will be important for the portfolio committee, over and above engaging with the IMTT and public and the Department of Public Service and Administration, for the portfolio to at least meet with the Public Service Commission, to meet with certain portfolio committees in the Northwest. And I think even the SCOPAS of National Parliament and the SCOPA of NCOP and the SCOPA of the province, because if the department wants condonation, and I want to use that as an example, if the province has arrived at a determination to say, let's condone this irregular expenditure. With my little knowledge, Chair, and coming from the history of some of us being part of SCOPAS in those days, irregular expenditures does not necessarily mean there was wasteful and fruitless expenditure. It only says there may have been poor planning, money may have been redirected somewhere. What's the value for money? Can we trace where the money is? And once you are able to prove, then they condone. But it is important for the portfolio committee to verify whether there was value for money, what informed the irregular expenditure, and so on and so on. So I agree broadly with what Honorable Lusuma is saying. And with my experience on how the SIU was dealing with the SABC investigation, I would even urge the committee to say, invite the SIU to say, how far are you with some of the things? Because, and it's not interference. You don't want the nitty-gritties, but they can give you a framework to say, this is how far we are going on some of these things. I'm saying this, Chair, because and I'm emphasizing what transpired when Honorable Thandi Modise appeared on behalf of Parliament in Zondo Commission. The questions that we are asking are important, and Parliament must be satisfied that we are doing, Cabinet is moving in the right direction in securing the public fiscus. So, and that's why I like the approach of members of the portfolio committee through your leadership to say, let's also verify some of these things and call those who are directly affected to be able to give some of the important information. Allow me, Chair, to invite the DG to respond on some of the things that the committee is asking clarity on. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
DG. Can you take the platform?
Thanks, Chairperson. We will be quick in responding to the questions. Chairperson, this is the first report that we are presenting to the committee. Now, as indicated earlier, the report deals with certain aspects of the interventions and certainly not everything. Now, what we want to request is that the committee accept this report as a baseline monitoring report, the first report that set the base of further work that needs to be done. Now, some of the questions that have come from the honorable members will then form part of the next report. So in other words, we move from this report and identify other areas that require to be included when we prepare the next report. So that we start somewhere and then, but know where we're going. So one has taken note of quite a number of questions which themselves suggest that the committee will also want us to extend our monitoring to other aspects of the intervention. So then it is by so saying, we will be having an agenda going forward so that when we meet next in chairperson, then it is clear on both sides, DPME and ourselves, on what areas needed to or need to be covered in the subsequent report. So that kind of contract makes it easy so that we give you what you want to get from us. So that is very important. Just maybe a response to some a few issues. On the question of the early warning systems, the question by Honorable Ntuli, this is where we are now, where we're saying that given what we know based on these case studies, how do we build early warning systems? Because as indicated, the intention is not to look for problems in provinces and indeed local government, but to preempt things to ensure that we don't go through this kind of challenges. Now, there will be two levels of building early warning systems. One would be political, the recommendations that we are going to make at the end to the political principals, particularly in the executive, but also in the legislature, on how at a political level we can preempt certain things and have early warning systems. But where we are sure is with regard to governance and performance. That area, when it comes to governance, this is in line with the priority one of the MTSF on building the capacity of the state. So there are indicators that we're put in place that allow us to monitor the performance of government or the state of governance throughout the 90 provincial departments and about 40 national government departments in the way, in the work that we do in local government. So we do have instruments that allow us to monitor the state of governance in the different areas, as I've indicated, 90 provincial government departments, about 40 national government departments, and some work that we do to complement DCOG in local government. Now, on service delivery also, this is a very important indicator of our monitoring, whether things are working or not in the different government departments, as I've indicated. And we use quite a lot of information from the Auditor General as well, and have bilaterals with the Auditor General so that we can also pick up early warnings of challenges related to service delivery. But as some colleagues in our space have suggested, we need to also build technological capabilities so that technology can also help us to identify early warnings in the course of the work of government. Now, the issues raised by Honorable Brewer, I think they were mainly commentary, observations in terms of what is happening there, so I will not respond to that. The question by Honorable Kibi will be dealt with in terms of the vacancy in the Premier's office. So Jonathan is going to deal with that. Honorable Komani, now there are just so many interdependencies in the work that is being done, and particularly when it comes to consequence management. Now, consequence management is twofold. There is consequence management of a criminal nature, which all we can do is to report to the law enforcement agencies and provide the necessary evidence. But as to what happens subsequently, we are no longer in control of that information. And in our report, we spoke a lot about the non-criminal activities or the activities that require interventions or consequence management employed by government. So talking about consequence management, we'll have to always differentiate the two. When it comes to the criminal issues, we'll only report on what has been referred to the law enforcement agencies. But in terms of how far those are progressing, we can only rely on information that can be provided by the law enforcement agency. And that is a daunting task on its own. But we can simply report on matters that are currently before disciplinary proceedings. Now, still on Honorable Komane, at this stage in this report, we did not make far-reaching observations in terms of the municipalities themselves, but it is a common knowledge as per the report of the Auditor General that there are serious challenges that are facing local government. But together with DCOG, we can come back to speak on local government if we are required to do so by Honorable members. Honorable Malumane, then again, Jonathan will speak briefly on how many cases have been finalized and how many are outstanding. Then let me admit that in future, when we present reports like this, Chairperson, we will also include time frames, particularly on areas that are in our control, so that we can give you comfort that all interventions are time bound. So that point by Honorable Malumane has been taken into consideration, and we will deal with it. Honorable Gondwe, on the role of the IMTT, the DM has dealt with that. And I think the chair of the IMTT can best offer a reply on how the IMTT is currently operating. But what we know, or what we have observed as we do our work, is that there is a working relationship between the NCOP and the IMTT, and this cannot be duplicated, because the other one deals with executive level issues, that is the IMTT, and the NCOP deals with issues from a parliamentary point of view. The IMTT also reports to Cabinet, which is the executive decision-making body in South Africa. So our understanding from a governance point of view is that there is no duplication in terms of the work of the IMTT and the NCOP as they complement each other. I will not deal with the issues raised by Honorable Sommer because the DM has already dealt with that. So Jonathan will deal with two issues. One is with regard to the cases and also on the vacancies. You know, how long was the vacancy, particularly in the Premier's office, open until it was filled recently? Thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan. You can take the floor.
Thank you very much. Let me first deal with the vacancies. I just need to get myself oriented here. Okay, so in terms of the vacancy in the office of the Premier, so the office of the Premier is headed up by the Director General. And the Director, so the incumbent is the Director General for the province, and is the head of department for the office of the Premier. The Director General in the Northwest resigned soon after the intervention began. Soon after the appointment of the administrator. I will have to check on the exact date, but I think it was round about August 2018. The role of the Director General was then performed by the administrator in the office of the Premier, who had been appointed as the accounting officer by National Treasury, Provincial Treasury. So the accounting officer powers in terms of the PFMA were transferred from the Director General to the administrator. And this took place in the other four Section 100 departments as well. So while there was no Director General until the appointment of DG Mogotle on the 1st of May 2021, that role was performed by the administrator. The Premier did appoint an acting Director General during the lockdown period, but that acting Director General did not have the powers that are normally conferred to a Director General. The administrator in the office of the Premier continued to perform the role of accounting officer as he does to date. In terms of the other vacancies, so I think I think Honourable Khumani's question about vacant posts of HODs in the office of the Premier is, I think that's a misunderstanding. I think our slide was not clear enough. What we meant to say there is the vacancies that we were talking about were the heads of departments in other departments. But given the responsibility as a transversal department responsible for the provincial HR functions, it's the Premier that appoints the heads of departments of all departments. So the filling of vacant HOD departments in other departments is a priority for the Office of the Premier. There are no vacant HOD posts in the Office of the Premier. I hope that clarifies. So the departments where there are currently vacancies are sports, arts, recreational, culture, human settlements, COGTA, public works and roads. I'll give you the status of each of these. The sports, arts and culture. So let me just explain that the departments are not without any form of leadership. In the case of sports, arts and culture, human settlement and COGTA, which are all under Section 101A, the HOD, who was appointed in the fifth administration, is there as an HOD on a month-to-month contractual renewal. So there is continuity. These are experienced HODs and very familiar with their departments. So for sports, arts and culture, the advert has been published and the process is at shortlisting stage. Human settlements, the Minister of Public Service and Administration has concurred with the advertisement, approved it for publication. You will note that because the Office of the Premier is under administration, the Minister of Public Service and Administration must concur with the decision of the Premier in relation to appointments. COGTA is currently with the Minister, and Department of Public Works is currently with the Minister of Public Service and Administration. There was the position of Superintendent General of the Provincial Treasury was the contract expired, and the Premier approved a new contract of 5 years for Mr. Kunene, who was SG of Provincial Treasury. Concern was raised with regard to process procedure, as there was not concurrence from the MPSA, and it was also, there was concern that it was not a regular process, and this is currently under review by the Minister of Public Service Administration. So there are no departments without heads of department, but the process of appointment following the expiry of the five-year contract is underway. In terms of cases, I will turn to that point. I think to answer the question around, in terms of disciplinary cases, what do we mean by priority cases? Priority cases are cases that have been identified by the intervention team, so in particular the administrator in a particular department, as being critical for advancing the objectives of the intervention. So for example, where a head of department is facing charges of corruption, that would be considered a priority disciplinary case. Where a senior manager responsible for a critical function, for example, the pharmaceutical services, is facing allegations of corruption, that would be regarded as a priority case. You must recognize that there are many, many disciplinary cases at various stages within any given provincial or national department, ranging from absent without permission or insubordination or any number, but these do not relate to the work of the intervention. So we've just pulled out a set of cases that are considered to be priority for the critical path of the intervention. I can just give the committee some more details now. In the office of the Premier, there were two cases initiated, and these were both linked to the outsourcing of a number of functions to a project management unit, irregularly appointed. One chief director was dismissed as a result of this process, and another chief director was sanctioned with 1 month without pay. In the Department of Health, two senior managers have been dismissed, including the head of department, and four cases are currently in progress. In the Department of Public Works and Roads, there is one case currently in progress. The chief director of roads was dismissed. The director of legal services resigned. And the HOD's case the HOD was dismissed. And you might have seen a report in this morning's or yesterday's media that the SIU has frozen the pension of the former HOD in relation to the IAMA public project management unit, which this SIU are currently investigating under a presidential proclamation signed earlier this year. In community safety and transport management, two cases are in progress and more will follow after the SIU investigation is concluded into scholar transport. In the Department of Education, the Director of Supply Chain Management was dismissed and the Chief Director of Infrastructure resigned. Disciplinary processes have been initiated against five other officials based on the recommendations of the forensic investigations. Chair, I'm unable to give timelines for these disciplinary cases, and I think some of the more granular details would be the administrators, when the committee calls the IMCT and all of the responsible ministers and administrators, that kind of detail would be provided. In terms of criminal cases related to the misappropriation of public funds, the National Prosecuting Authority, together with the Directorate of Priority Crimes Investigations, provides regular reporting against 51 criminal cases related to public funds in the Northwest to the IMTT. at the report that we had at the, so the latest report that we have access to, which is the end of June, beginning of June, there were 13, so of the 51, there were 13 cases enrolled for trial. There were 2 cases waiting to be enrolled. There were 6 cases awaiting guidance of the decision of the NPA. There were 17 cases under investigation by the Directorate of Priority Crime Investigation, and 15 cases had been finalized. Of those 15, 5, there were guilty verdicts, 1 not guilty, and 6 decisions by the NPA to decline to prosecute. The Asset Forfeiture Unit is currently involved in efforts to recover funds in priority cases. However, to date, no forfeiture orders have been obtained. The Asset Forfeiture Unit is dependent on other processes within other agencies such as the NPA and DPCI, the prosecutor. And then finally, as mentioned, the President approved a new proclamation in March 2021 approving the Special Investigating Unit to investigate matters related to the Department of Public Works and Roads. And so that means that there are now 7 presidential proclamations relevant to the Northwest, under which the SIU is undertaking investigations. There were 44 matters referred to the SIU at the start of the intervention, and those have resulted in these presidential proclamations, which empower the SIU to investigate. Again, the committee is urged to call the relevant law enforcement agencies for a much more granular report. DG, those are the 2 issues you requested that I speak to. I will hand back to yourself, DG.
Thank you, Jonathan. Chairperson, we are done responding to the questions.
Thank you, DG. Honorable members, we are deferring these 2 sets of minutes to next week's meeting. There are some fine tuning that need to be done on those sets of minutes. And we will make sure that the interministerial task team report do serve before the portfolio committee. And we'll also make sure that we get the Department of Public Service and Administration before the committee. With that, I now adjourn the meeting. Thank you very much to everybody.
Thank you, Chair.
Long live the Chair.
Thank you very much.
Long live DA.